Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program Number 493, Interview with Daniel Hopsicker about Electoral Fraud. This is being recorded on January 2nd of the year 2005, and for Daniel Hopsicker, Happy New Year. Daniel, welcome once again to our airwaves.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you and your listeners, Dave.
Well, we'll see ultimately how happy a new year it does turn out to be. Certainly the last year was, in the sense of the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times, very interesting indeed. One of the very interesting aspects of 2004 was the 2004 election in the United States. There was a huge disparity between the exit polls, which showed John Kerry a clear winner, and the ultimate results, of course, which maintained that George Bush, in fact, won the presidency. In the Ukraine, there was a huge disparity between the exit polls and the ultimate results, and the people of the Ukraine turned out in the streets and ultimately overturned those election results. We're going to talk about some interesting, not only parallels, but some items that dovetail with that in a second. Just before we went on the air, you mentioned that you had a brand new revelation, something that has not appeared so far in print on Mad Cow Morning News. Can you tell us what that is, please?
Yeah, can I give you a touch of background first?
Sure. Oh, absolutely. As much as is necessary for the listeners to understand.
Okay. Well, we're discussing the very real possibility, are we not, that the 2004 election, presidential election, was fixed.
Right.
Strangely enough, on the eve of the 2000 election, I had been urged by my wackier friends to consider their wacky notion that American elections were not as open and honest as we all know them to be. And I was shooting a documentary in Austin. I was with George W. Bush on the night of the election. Then, of course, I went to Florida, where I saw the assembled national press in Tallahassee and West Palm Beach conducting the only investigative reporting being done that I could see concerned the right makeup shade to wear for light and shade conditions in Tallahassee.
Mm-hmm.
Being a former business reporter, I decided to take on myself one simple task, to investigate the ownership, see who the owners were, because I'd seen nothing about it, of the two major election service companies. That's what they're called. It's called the election service industry. To investigate the ownership of the two major election service companies that caused the Florida vote snafu. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequent to that, I discovered that the ownership does not withstand close scrutiny, that a long history of felons, international swindlers, and movers and shakers that you wouldn't trust with your wallet had owned the companies that count our vote. And this is something I'd never heard about before, and I'll bet, you know, at a certain point, Dave, you hadn't either, unless you're way smarter than I am. We always assumed, didn't we, that the companies that, we went in to vote, I never even thought about the election machine that I was voting on. And if I'd have thought about it, I'd have assumed that there was some guy from IBM with a white smock on, calibrating the machine. And as a result of the investigation I did in 2000, which we did a documentary on called The Big Fix 2000, and I was going to do a book on before September 11th happened. As a result of that investigation, we discovered that it led to mob guys in New Jersey named Pasquale Rocco Risi and Ireland's richest multimillionaire, Dr. Michael Smurfit, who hangs out at Zurich racetracks with Geneva currency speculators, and all kinds of interesting things. You're with me so far, all right?
Sure.
So, now, fast forward to 2004. There is a strong suspicion among most people who had their eyes open that the election was fixed, and everybody's running around trying to answer the question, how?
Right.
Well, not all of, but the preponderance of the Democratic Party-fueled interest has gone to exactly the same things that they talked about after the 2000 election. Minority intimidation, voting rolls, precincts being closed when they're supposed to be open, that sort of stuff. But they haven't talked much about the companies that counted the votes.
Right.
Once again, the Democratic Party has completely fumbled the ball, and clearly the reason is because this is bipartisan fraud that's going on. So, we're looking for ways in which the election was fixed. Specific ways, plus the big picture. Well, if you look at the big picture, and across the United States, what we have are hundreds, actually probably in the thousands of reports of irregularities in, you know, across the gamut. But certainly I believe there's more than enough there to indicate systemic fraud that focused on crucial places. You don't have to do it everywhere, do you? Ohio, Florida, one or two others, that you're looking at something that could be systemic. Well, something that could be that large. So what we are looking at, if the election, the 2004 election, was fixed, is almost a contradiction in terms. It is a massive covert operation. Okay?
Okay, and that meant in the specific sense of an intelligence operation.
Absolutely.
Okay, go ahead.
So it is both at the same time, I mean, and, you know, when I say massive, I mean, it's transpiring in, you know, 80 to 200 locations. That's a large operation, and it's covert.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if evidence of it has surfaced in only one or two places, which we plan to talk about, Tallahassee and also in Ohio. Well, who conducts massive covert operations? Intelligence agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Like the CIA. Has the CIA conducted? I mean, you know, I mean, this is the kind of thing that they do. Okay? So now let's get to the revelation that I've got for you this week. If indeed the 2004 election was fixed, certainly in Florida, we are looking at the same people that were associating with the terrorists in 2001. Because it would be the same presiding entity, okay?
All right.
That both of these operations revolved around. Now let's get to Wally Hilliard.
Just one sec. Now this is in conjunction with the fixing of the elections that we're going to be speaking about, Hilliard, right?
Right, exactly.
Briefly, before we do that, and obviously many of the listeners know who Wally Hilliard is, ever so briefly as you can, Daniel, tell us who Wally Hilliard is, because he's still, unfortunately, not a household name.
And exactly, I'm prepared to do that. The official story of the terrorist attack was that the terrorists wandered into two adjacent flight schools in Venice, Florida, the preponderance of them, actually dozens of them, and learned to fly, and then went up to New York and wreaked havoc, all under the radar of our official government agencies. Well, the man that owned the flight school that both of the terrorists that took down the World Trade Center, both of the terrorist pilots that flew planes into the World Trade Center, the man that owned that flight school, as you know, Dave, and as we've discussed already, had his Learjet confiscated on a runway at Orlando Executive Airport in July of 2000, the same month Otto arrived, with 43 pounds of heroin on board.
Right.
Now, at the very least, this would indicate that this man is pretty well connected and probably a part of something larger and sinister and hidden, an organization hidden from the American public.
And not the Kiwanis Club.
That's exactly right.
Go ahead.
So now I have discovered that Wally Hilliard has strong connections with another man who I have discovered has strong connections to the vote.
Wow.
Adnan Khashoggi. That's number one.
Mrs. Khashoggi's baby boy Adnan is tied in with some of the funny business vis-a-vis the voting?
Absolutely.
Okay, go ahead.
But wait, there's more.
Somehow I intuited that. Go ahead.
I have come into possession, thanks to the innate patriotism of Americans, even when they sometimes find themselves on the wrong side of history, of a photograph, a recent photograph of Wally Hilliard, 3-year-old photograph, taken in Havana, Cuba. where Mr. Hilliard is strapping a diamond-beveled Rolex onto the wrist of Fidel Castro's top advisor.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I guess socialism is finally beginning to pay off, huh?
Well, I mean, at the very least, you wonder what Jerry Falwell is going to think about this, or actually more, you wonder what his Thomas Rhode, you know, good Christian Baptist congregants are going to think about the fact that a man who Falwell took $1 million from and never repaid is associating with socialists in Havana on behalf of the Mormon Church of Utah.
So in this capacity, Hilliard was representing the Mormon Church in making overtures or effecting a liaison with Fidel Castro?
Absolutely.
That is a Latter-day Saint indeed, Nespa. Anyway, this is fascinating. So,
Hilliard was in Havana with a paper bag full of presidential Rolex watches, attempting to negotiate a deal with Castro that would allow the Mormon church to establish a 10,000-acre cattle ranch in Cuba, in anticipation, I'm told, of Cuba's being opened up to Americans again.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his. So at the very least, now we can see that whatever the government was telling us about the 9/11 attack and the terrorist presence in Florida is not true. I mean,
yeah.
We can see that this man was not a retired businessman from Green Bay who just happened to buy a flight school because a fast-talking Dutch con man named Rudy Dekkers talked him into it.
By the way, ever so briefly, Daniel, in your remarkable book, Welcome to Terrorland, Muhammad Atta and the 911 Cover-Up in Florida, you go into Mr. Hilliard and his many connections, those of Dekkers, etc. And for listeners who would like to access some of that information via audio, for the record, programs 482, 483, and 484 are archived at WFMU.org/Dave Emery, and we'll provide you with some background on exactly what we're talking about here. Go ahead, Dan. I'm fascinated to hear how Adnan Khashoggi ties into this concatenation.
Right. So first we need now to just momentarily tie Wally Hilliard back to Adnan Khashoggi.
Uh-huh.
That became extraordinarily clear about a year ago when I learned that two competing, well, we don't want to call them drug factions because they're more official than that, actually. But two competing drug smuggling organizations were vying for control of a tiny airport on the backside of nowhere in the Bahamas, in a place called Rum Key. Wally Hilliard's Learjet was flying over there in support of one of the factions on a weekly basis, we learned. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, I had always known there was going to be something there. Adnan Khashoggi, of course, is currently a fugitive from justice. He's been convicted of fraud in, I believe, Thailand. He's wanted in a couple other jurisdictions. And we learned that he is currently hiding out in a guest house at Donald Trump's estate in Palm Beach, Florida.
Fascinating. By the way, ever so briefly, for younger listeners who may not be familiar with the name Adnan Khashoggi, he is a Saudi, primarily located Egyptian-born weapons dealer who and general big money man. He was one of the central figures in some of the Iran-Contra-related arms machinations. He got his start in business doing a $25 million truck deal with Mohammed bin Laden, Osama's father. And he also, as Daniel has revealed in some of his articles on the 911 BS movement, he also has played a significant role in helping to finance some of the so-called 911 truth movement. And those elements, not surprisingly, are the ones handing out the disinformation about, you know, the cruise missile hit the Pentagon, controlled demolition of the World Trade Center and so forth. Sometime, Daniel, we'll have to talk about that. And having worked in the construction industry, the notion of a controlled demolition of the World Trade Center is, well, it's what you'd expect from people from a UFO cult, which is what you compared this to. But that's who Adnan Khashoggi is. Now, you say he's a fugitive from justice, and you allege that he's also hanging out at an estate owned by Donald Trump in Florida?
Right, right. Khashoggi reportedly. This is inside information.
All right, we'll just say allegedly. Yeah.
Yeah. If you do a search on Khashoggi and Trump, Donald Trump, you find out that they've. In fact, they are intertwined in relations that are going to affect our story.
Okay, so basically, as of this present moment here on 1205, Adnan Khashoggi is allegedly at an estate owned by Donald Trump, and let me guess that he is not studying to make an appearance on The Apprentice.
No, I don't imagine he would be. I talked about this with someone, and we just concluded that the reason Khashoggi can move in and out of South Florida with impunity is that they own it.
Yeah, well, no, the iron bars do not a prison make, and anyone familiar with recent American history would know that. An awful lot of the criminals not only don't end up behind bars, they wind up in places like the White House and other places. And the extraordinary tale that you have presented us with of the flight school through which the 911 hijackers infiltrated, and their many connections to various aspects of the intelligence communities of various countries, the heavy overlap with drug dealing, elements German and so forth. It's just a fascinating tale. So, well, yeah, Florida's kind of like the Texas of the East Coast at this point.
Okay, yes. Let me make one other point about Khashoggi, and then let me make a point about Florida, and then let's return to the story.
Sure.
The crucial aspect for Khashoggi in terms of our story is that since the mid-70s, he has been working hand in glove with the American CIA, funding in a what appears to be a supranational organization. Okay. He has been key to the CIA's funding all through the 80s, for example, BCCI. So Khashoggi is part of the same organization that our boys belong to. It's not that he's been working, at least on the surface, at cross purposes to us.
Oh, sure. Now, he was one of the trusted operatives of the Reagan-Bush team and had, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard, and hence his utility.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, a point about Florida. There is another story out there about which I have no personal knowledge.
Okay.
But which rings true to me. It is Wayne Madsen's story of a $26 million, I believe that's the figure, slush fund that paid for retired CIA and FBI operatives to infiltrate voting election offices nationwide.
Okay, very quickly interjecting, this is Wayne Madsen, who is an online journalist. He wrote a series of articles for Online Journal. The actual sum is $29.6 million. There is a caveat, though. By Wayne's own admission or through his discovery, that check actually turned out to be a forgery, which he believes was deliberately floated in order to throw people off of the sense, sort of a Karl Rove job, so to speak.
Right. I have no knowledge one way or the other about the veracity of the specifics of his report.
Right.
But what I'm drawing your attention to, number one, is it has the ring of truth to me as far as what I've already mentioned about if the election was fixed, it was a massive covert operation.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And the second and probably more interesting point is that his story alleges that this fraud began to be perpetrated in the year 2000 in Florida.
Okay.
The guy that came forward apparently to talk was approached by GOP operatives, was he not, or he alleges in Apopka, Florida. Now, I have specific information that just at this time, Jeb Bush's, governor of Florida's technology advisor, was being convicted of felonies in Tallahassee. And subsequently went to work doing stuff that makes no sense when one looks at it. So one wonders what that individual named Roy Cales.
How's that spelled, Daniel? How's the last name spelled?
C-A-L-E-S.
Okay.
what he has been doing since 2001. If you go back and read my series on COINTELPRO 911, when I got to the part of discussing the myriad entities named Genesis that Khashoggi was using in his operation, we discussed briefly there being two Genesis communications networks which don't seem to make sense. One out of Minnesota, which airs today programs by Alex Jones and those wacky in plain sight people.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, the other Genesis Communications Network in Tallahassee, which consists of Jeb Bush's felon technology advisor and his associate.
Fascinating.
We're getting convoluted here. But now let's get to one other point about Khashoggi before we move forward.
Okay.
And I think it's fascinating that this point has not been addressed in all of the millions of words that I've seen written about the current situation in Ohio. I have seen no speculation at all that the election service company cited as being responsible for the preponderance of that, a company called Triad Governmental Systems. I have heard no talk at all about that company's potential ties to Adnan Khashoggi.
Now, this is the name of the company is Triad Governmental Systems.
Correct.
And this is tied into Khashoggi, and in turn, this dovetails with the fixing of the vote in Ohio.
Well, we don't know. I don't know for certain. Wait, let me just explain this now, okay?
Right.
If you do a search on the internet on Adnan Khashoggi and Triad, you will come up with a dozen entities named Triad that Khashoggi has owned, okay? Khashoggi owned in the mid-80s, when Triad Governmental Systems was founded, Khashoggi owned a huge farm outside Louisville, Kentucky, called Triad, where the first nationally organized drug smuggling organization, known as The Company, dropped drugs. We remember this from Sally Denton's book.
The Bluegrass Conspiracy.
The Bluegrass Conspiracy.
By the way, just parenthetically for veteran listeners, we went into The Company, unquote, in Radio Free America number 26. That's available from Spitfire. And the indications are that this criminal syndicate that was trafficking in drugs and weapons, that had tremendous access to, among other institutions, the China Lake Naval Weapons Station in California, a super secure installation, probably did have some links with the, quote, company, unquote, as some people term the CIA. So go ahead now. So the Triad Systems dovetails with the...
We don't know that.
Okay.
We don't know that. But what we do know is no one has even raised the question. Okay?
All right. So now, one thing, I'm a little unclear as to the link between the, quote, company, unquote, this organized crime syndicate, and how this dovetails with Khashoggi and Triad Systems.
Well, it doesn't, but I mean, or maybe it does. I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful to find out that the company was involved in the supranational organization that Rudy Dekkers is said to belong to,
right?
For example,
okay.
You know, we don't know that for a fact. I don't know. You know, I don't know for a fact that Khashoggi. Well, I know for a fact that Khashoggi was involved with because of the proximity of where the offshore shell companies were situated, with the band of Saudi billionaires who owned a company on which U.S. overseas servicemen votes were counted on, called Election.com.
Interesting. Go ahead.
Election.com. Just discuss the broad. Your listeners, I'm sure, understand the concept of parking, okay? But let me briefly give an analogy that I've thought of over the last couple of days as I try to find something that'll explain it to people that read what I'm about to put up on the web. Let's say you're Tony Soprano. That's the one TV show I still watch, is The Sopranos. You're a mob boss in New Jersey. and you've got a new girlfriend, and you already have a mistress in your secret condominium, and so you call up your buddy Eddie, who's the mob boss in the next city, and you ask if you can put your new girlfriend in a secret condominium that he owns in the same complex. And so what you do is you park your new girlfriend, okay, in a condo owned by somebody else, but she's still yours.
Okay.
I don't know that all your listeners are going to agree with the political, but you understand what I'm talking about, right?
Politics makes strange bedfellows. Go ahead.
You still own whatever is on the premises there, but it's not registered in your name. It's in someone else's name. Mm-hmm. So what we have here is a situation where these election companies, and of course, one of the things that spies do is operate through dummy front companies that are shells inside of shells inside of shells, all designed to throw you off the trail. Okay? So what we have here is a situation in this election services industry where these companies get flipped from owner to owner. I mean, I believe that Sequoia Pacific, the second largest election services company, was sold from Smurfit, Dr. Michael Smurfit, to De La Rue, because my investigation had exposed Smurfit's control. So Smurfit sells, Dr. Michael Smurfit, Ireland's richest multimillionaire, who isn't even Irish, by the way, sells a company that counts 1-3 American votes a couple years ago to De La Rue, which is the entity that prints the Queen's banknotes, prints the currency for the central banks of Europe. So now, an entity, if you own the company that prints the banknotes for the government of England, for the Queen of England, and for the central banks of Europe, you have a company that's pretty well tied in with whatever plutocrats still exist. You with me?
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, I was not aware of this. By the way, we've got about 1 minute left on this side. We're going to have to take a break.
Let me just finish off with election.com. When election.com was revealed to be owned by five secret Saudi billionaire investors, the company was sold a year ago to Accenture, which is Arthur Andersen, after Arthur Andersen was disgraced and disbanded. Arthur Andersen, of course, is the accounting firm that made Enron possible.
Right.
And so the remnants of that firm now count votes of American servicemen voting overseas.
Interesting. Very, very interesting grouping of individuals, and this is a discussion that we'll carry on the other side. And by the way, this is completely new to me. Daniel has a series of four articles so far on the various election machinations, and I have a bunch of material scheduled for discussion about that. This is new to me. You can visit Daniel's website at www.madcowprod.com, madcowprod.com. And be aware that sister station WFMU is archiving these interviews on real audio at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Don't forget to visit the Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com. This concludes Side 1. For the record, program number 493, another conversation with Daniel Hopsicker about election fraud being recorded on January 2nd of the year 2005. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.